Well, everybody, welcome back to Switchcast. This is the third in a three-part special coverage of the Cannonball Records Over Time. That's right. We started a couple weeks ago with the pre-war era, and then we did the Cannonball Run era last week with Ed Bullion. And this week, we are covering the modern era of Cannonball Records, which start in 2006 and go pretty much up through the present day. And with me this week to help in the colored commentary is a good friend of mine, Ben Wilson, also known as Charlie Safari. And the reason he is helping me cover these events is there's a number of reasons, but he is a Cannonball Run fan, of course, big fan of the movie itself. He's been in the movie car business. He's been around cars all his life and just is generally an expert on those things. But also his connection with Cannonball is a little more special and involved than many of us, even those of us who have done it. He has organized quite a few modern underground Cannonball races. They had some odd restrictions in either budget or year or both, as he wanted to keep the speeds down somewhat. He didn't want a full no holds barred cross country race in the modern era, because I think he feels the same way that I do, that it's not possible to do that without dire consequences. But he wanted to recreate the feeling and the experience of the original Cannonball Run, because we can't recreate that with a solo record. So, Ben, thank you for joining me. How are you doing over in New Zealand?
Great. I'm actually in the UK at the moment, and I'm thoroughly jet-lagged from my last trip to Alaska in some junk cars to throw off a cliff the 4th of July. So I've just got back via Iceland, and I don't know what day, what time, or where I am. Obviously.
That is true. You tried to do the Zoom at 2 a.m. this morning with me, and I was dead asleep. And yeah, your math doesn't work so well when you're jet lagged, but that's okay. I'm glad you're here with us. So let's get right into the records. We finished off in 1983 with David Diem and Doug Turner in the Ferrari 308 winning the U.S. Express and resetting the Cannonball quote unquote record to 32 hours and 7 minutes, which is one of the most well-known and iconic times in history just because of the documentary by the same name. So, of course, there was no known Cannonball activity between 1983 and the early 2000s. We did have the Gumball Rally, which was a pretty cool tribute to the Cannonball. It was a lot of crazy cars, crazy speeds, but it was also nothing like a Cannonball at the same time. Yes, they were using police countermeasures, and it kind of looked like a Cannonball during the day, but they were partying at night, staying in lavish hotels every night, you know, maybe snorting some cocaine with Instagram models. Well, this is before Instagram, so, you know, with regular magazine models, but it was nothing like actual Cannonball.
I'm in the wrong business. I should have been there.
Right. Right. But that did rope one person in particular into Cannonball. As Alex Roy writes in his book, The Driver, he was essentially looking for this secret underground race, the actual Cannonball, and he was looking for it in the Gumball. Now, he never found it, but he decided to go and do it himself, partly to just for his own edification and experience, but also to kind of the narrative with the documentary when he met up with Corey Wells, was that he wanted to prove that 3207 was possible and not a faked run, because a lot of competitors were questioning the 3207 run, saying, well, they had two cars, they put the car on a plane, all of this hogwash, because this is way too fast, there's no way it's humanly possible. You know, basically just a bunch of sore losers saying, well, if he went faster than I did, then it must have been cheating. So
there was a lot of talk about the Ferrari disappearing and reappearing, and there was snow, and that was the major argument. But of course, realistically, the 308 was built for rallying in snow. It was built as to replace the Lancia Stratos. Yep. It was actually, and if you've ever, like, you've driven enough of them to know, the 308 is actually a really good handling car in all weathers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's why the people in the 928s were a bit sore in their front engine, rear wheel drive kind of like configuration. If they'd been driving a 911, it would have been a lot closer.
Possibly. Although a 911 has never finished well in a Cannonball. A 911 Targa did win the four ball rally, but it's never placed well in a U.S. Express or Cannonball. Never had an exceptional time. I think a modern 911 Turbo would be a great car to attempt the record in. But
here's the fun in that. You need the death touch of the 911. If you're not driving someone that's going to try and kill you like a psychotic ex-girlfriend every 5 seconds, what's the point of driving one?
Well, we now know why you've been chosen for the colored commentary. So Alex Roy, Dave Marr, and Corey Wells, who she was the camera girl in the back for the documentary, not necessarily a scout or third driver, but she is listed on the record because she was in the car, set out in October of 2006. This was their third attempt. Some say second. I don't know. There's a little bit of controversy there. But anyway, there had been multiple attempts by Alex previously. One was a scouting run, another to see what was possible. Another one, they had lost a fuel filter. Yeah, they had a breakdown in Missouri due to a bad fuel filter. So this was their third attempt, and they finished in a time of 31 hours and 4 minutes. So they did beat the record by about an hour. Now, they went from the Classic Car Club in Manhattan to the Santa Monica Pier, which is noteworthy for a couple reasons. The traditional route for at least a Cannonball is the Red Ball Garage in Manhattan to the Portofino in Redondo Beach. Now, there was only four runs, including the 71 solo run in Moon Trash Van, that used that route. But that has become kind of immortalized, partly because the Red Ball and the Portofino still exist. So it's just become an easy start and end point. Now, Alex did not use those start and end points, partly because he was trying to more accurately represent or recreate the U.S. Express route, but also I think because it was easier. Classic Car Club Manhattan was like two turns and boom, you're on the highway. So you don't have to deal with all of Manhattan traffic that you do leaving the Red Ball. And the Santa Monica Pier was also much closer to the highway than the Redondo Beach, the Portofino in Redondo Beach.
Santa Monica part was definitely an odd choice. But Brock only ever picked the Red Bull carriage because it was literally the car and driver car parking place. So that's why he picked it in the center of, it was just easy for him. And there's Darien as well, of course, but I think we'll allow that as a official start point. But the end point really should be the Portofino if you're going to do a full-on Cannonball one, I think.
Correct. But we don't necessarily discount any that have not been those start and end points, because the pre-war era, it was essentially just anywhere. New York, California, and it was split between San Francisco and Los Angeles. So that has become over history. Listen, if you do a run, New York, California, California, New York, whatever it is, those are the start and end points. If you go California to like Savannah, Georgia, which a guy did in the 1930s, I believe, and claimed to reset the record, nobody really counted that because he cut like 300 or 200 miles off the trip. So it was seen as, well, that's not the same thing. So California, New York have been stamped, immortalized as the start and end points. And because of the history with the Cannonball Run, the Red Ball and Portofino have become just the standardized start and end points now. And of course, after Alex Roy, everybody else has used those as their start and end points.
I think I've had a theory that it goes beyond that, you know.
Yeah.
That really back to the very early days of Crossing America, I think that New York to Los Angeles would have been the standardized time using anything from the post all the way through to horses and everything, trucks. And when they built their first freeway systems, that was the main connection point, which was New York to Los Angeles. And I think traditionally that's always been looked at as being the progressive time of transport, you know,
right.
Horses, the cars, motorbikes, et cetera. I think that that's what they picked. The great race was almost New York to LA. And that's where it was drawn from. And I think that's where Brock drew his part of the making the Cannonball was always from the history of that. And it's almost like, how fast can you cross the Atlantic? You know, it was like, how fast can you cross America?
Yes.
You know, yeah.
Right. And New York and Los Angeles are the two iconic cities. So when you're crossing America, you know, the shortest route is Jacksonville to San Diego. Nobody gives a rip. What's Jacksonville in American history, right? New York to Los Angeles are two iconic cities, and it represents
the shining examples of the new colonial country, right? And then, yes. You know, that's why that was done. And it was really probably one of the biggest land masses you could cross at the time. Australia wasn't crossable until a long time later, even though they did it. But New York to LA was almost the set guidelines. They did a peek into Paris and London and Sydney and everything afterwards. But I think New York to LA was the home of the motor car. That was actually the set standard of how fast you could get anywhere on land.
Switchcast is brought to you by Boxcast. Boxcast is a live streaming company based in Cleveland, Ohio, and they serve broadcasters and viewers around the world. Their founders launched Boxcast back in 2013 with one purpose: to make people part of the experience. If you're looking to live stream your podcast, church service, car show, sporting event, your wedding, or even your cannonball attempt, Boxcast is an easy, flexible live streaming platform for organizations and individuals. Boxcast is so easy, we're broadcasting this from a phone. Head over to switchcars.com/boxcast for your free trial. Again, it's switchcars.com/boxcast for your free trial. Let's fast forward to 2007, and we're going to talk about a slower time, but we'll explain why. May 12 to 14, 2007, Richard Rawlings and Dennis Collins in a Ferrari 550 Maranello. Ben is covering his face. Claim to have done it in a time of 31 hours and 59 minutes. This is one of the most widely known modern cannonball records. And it also carried the torch for Ferrari, because Ferrari held three records in the 70s and 80s. The 308, the Dino, and the Daytona. Contrary to the German passenger cars that we use now that are nondescript and fast and comfortable, they were using bright, brash Ferraris.
I'd like to say what a fantastic time that was to be alive. That Daytona is amazing.
Like, absolutely.
Man, I mean, I like the Dino as well, but the Daytona, that big V12 sort of Colombo engined monster. I mean, I've been in it, right? I mean, what can I say? That thing is just, that's amazing. That is like truly like, you know, Concorde. When the Concorde came out, it changed aviation history. I remember like the Daytona coming out and it just changed everything Ferrari was made, the big GT, rather than the small agile sports cars. That was the first.
And that's what I love about the 550 Maranello. If you put it next to a Daytona, it is a perfect modern interpretation of the Daytona. So it was
You could sell me a 550. I could buy one of those. I like them.
It's a good tribute. So, of course, you know, Richard Rawlings is well known for having the record, mostly because of his TV show and the tattoo on his arm. But why are we talking about a slower time later? Was it really a record? It was done after the Alex Roy Dave Marr run, but Alex chose to sit on his record and not announce it for a year because of a concern over the statute of limitations. There was no precedent in modern times for doing this type of thing when Alex did it. So he's concerned, like, man, he might go to jail as soon as he releases this record. Now we know from, you know, hindsight, obviously, nobody really cares. Ed Bullion released his record info like the day after he did it. But Alex was a little more concerned about it. So he sat on the record. In that time frame, Richard Rawlings and Dennis Collins allegedly did their run, and they just went public with it immediately. So as far as they were concerned and as far as the public was concerned, they held the record. So the question is a record counted when it's set or when it's claimed?
Or maybe when you actually do it at all. Would be the other part of it that I might interject with that, because basically
let's talk about that.
Okay. Well, I think that it's a very clearly a good idea to hold back your record time and not go to jail, because jail is not where we all want to be at. And, you know, even if it's a nice clean run, keeping out of jail is a good thing to do. Richard Rawlins releasing it was just an FU to Alex, where he wanted to be the man who beat the record. He knew Alex was going for it. They talked about it 1,000 times in Gumball and the, it was just the Gumball 3000. I think there was
Gumball, Bull Run, running. Whatever.
Yeah, yeah, there was one in, all the Poser road rallies back for those days. No offense to you, Poser road
rallies. Yeah, they were big competitors on those rallies, and they were the ones most prepared. They were the ones with the scanners, all the countermeasures, stuff like that. So they took it the most seriously.
Yeah. The more, it's like going to a dress-up party and I'm the best costume, basically. But not that I don't respect that, because I actually thought I was hilarious. I used to watch all that stuff myself. But Alex was really serious. He was really, 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 really serious about getting the Cannibal Run. He wanted to do it. And really, that was the first time anybody really shown interest in a long period of time. The Brock did occasionally kick up a, maybe we're going to run another Cannonball over the years. But of course, that was before our time. It didn't really exist. It happened the last time in the early 90s, I believe it was. But Alex really wanted to clock that record. And he was serious. He put everything into it. And he did it. Whereas Rawlins definitely didn't do any of that. And everything he talks about in it just contradicts the fact that he did it. The only proof he's really got is that tattoo on his arm and the fact that he says he does it. And then he loses even more credibility by keeping on saying that he's the king of Cannonball, when quite clearly, I think you and Arnie are.
Yeah, I mean, his record's been beaten many, many a time. But I think with a Cannonball record, it's kind of like, you know, being the president, right? You are always referred to as a president of the United States. Right. Ex-president. But you're always referred to, even former presidents, that they hold that title in perpetuity. So I think with a Cannonball record, it's kind of the same thing. Like Ed Boley, Cannonball record holder.
I don't think they call me the ex-president of the United States, because there's significantly zero proof that I've ever been president of America.
All right. So let's talk about that. You brought up two points of controversy with the Rawlings and Collins run. One is that there's zero proof, and that is absolutely true. Rawlings has claimed that there's proof, but it's never been shown to anybody, but maybe he didn't care to show it to anybody. That's happened before. There have been runs where people just said, I don't need anyone to validate this. I don't care. I'm going to hold the proof because I don't need the accolades. Two, I don't remember what your second point was. He contradicts himself when he's telling the story. I want to address both of those, because I'm still not convinced that the run didn't happen. I know that you're 100% convinced that it didn't happen.
Not in the way he said it did.
That is true. It did not happen the way he said he did. So let's address the proof first. At the time that he did it, there was essentially no burden of proof, because there was no track record of modern solo records, right? So when Alex did it, he set a standard of a burden of proof, partly because he was trying to prove that it was possible and that the 3207 time wasn't cheating. So he knew that he needed to have enough proof so that people could not debunk his claims like they tried to do with 3207. So he set his own standard based on that rationale. When Rawlings and Collins went out, they just did it on a bet. They weren't necessarily trying to uphold any lineage of anything. There was no foundation of modern runs that would require them to have proof. There was no committee. There was no other people. It was just them. Nothing had been done with Cannonball for 20 plus years. There's that. And I think that's part of the reason they don't have proof. Second,
with
that's also possible. With regards to the contradictions, I could explain that in that Richard Rawlings is a big personality. Fast and Loud might accurately describe him and his stories. And I don't think that he's so much concerned with the elements of truth in his stories as much as the elements of entertainment. He is a TV entertainer. and he will potentially craft the recounting of this event in a way that's expedient, that that makes whatever the best story is at the time when he's telling it. So I don't know. Yes, there's tons and tons of times that he's contradicted himself. I've heard them. I've seen them. They don't make any sense. But that could just be Richard.
Well,
right?
I accept Fisherman's Tales. That, hey, he did it somewhat slower, but he didn't quite make it there, or he didn't beat the record. His time in, yeah. But every time I hear some of the things he says, it's just plainly crap.
Oh, yeah. What he says is crap.
Like the,
but that
the,
doesn't the necessarily head. Mean he didn't do it. Because you've also got to say that Dennis Collins, you've also got to say that Dennis Collins is lying. Benjamin Franklin, I think, said, how do three people keep a secret?
Well, easy, because they're all liars.
Well, no, if two of them are dead, right? So having two people trying to perpetuate the lie is a lot harder than one single person.
Dennis talk about it.
You don't.
Like he's very no, because he does. He's clever enough not to completely trip himself up. And all of us that like, if you haven't done it, it's fine. It's like me saying, "Hey, I could run a 25-mile marathon." I mean, you know me. You know I'd probably have a heart attack after mile number 5. But the fact is, like, I could say I've done it. I could make it. But if you've done a 25-mile marathon, you take one look at me, you're like, this guy's probably not doing 25-mile marathons, right? And the same with him. When he talks about the Ferrari, he talks about the telemetry system that this thing had. And he said it went over 200 miles an hour 9 times.
Yeah,
I just want you, Ferrari 550, how many times have you driven a Ferrari 550? Where is this system that tracks this in that car, please? That will work from an Italian. It's not his crap. He showed it on TV. I saw the little lines of how many times you're over 200 miles an hour. And that's just simply the most fictitious thing I can imagine that somebody said straight off the bat. That's, I mean, how do you come back from that? You know?
But, well, maybe as we have proven that a low 30s cannonball run.
Man, if you give me that
car, not necessarily,
I can do 32 hours in it, right? We all know it. I can do 37 hours in a flipping LTD taxi with 500,000 miles on it. If you give me a Ferrari 550, I'm pretty sure I could do the run quicker.
So maybe that's the point, right? 32 hours is not particularly exciting. You can do it without having any good stories to tell. So maybe it was so uneventful that he thought, well, shoot, I need to make this a great story. I'm just going to interject all this stuff because maybe it was just this run that was like, it was pretty smooth. Nothing really happened. We just cruised at 120.
I dipped it out my car with everything. And I put all the latest stuff in it. A fuel bag in the front of it that I filled it up with. And
they already had that stuff for they were on the Bull Run rally. So they already had all the countermeasures.
13 stops in the Ferrari. 200 miles an hour. I mean,
I can be convinced either way. Maybe it didn't happen. Maybe it did. But there's circumstantial arguments on both sides of it, and I think the argument could be made that it could have happened, and Richard is just spinning stories to make it seem far more exciting than it actually was, also that it didn't happen. It doesn't really matter at this point.
No, his record was beaten before he even went. Yeah. I mean, there was no glory to be had for it, but if there's any man that squeezed every drop out of that lemon, that is definitely Richard Rawlins.
Absolutely. And absolutely.
I don't disagree that it was an entirely plausible time to run. In fact, you could have run it faster, as we all know, realistically.
Sure.
Now, if you had a well set up car in that time, you could have done it quicker. And a 550 is a fairly capable car. I mean, as long as it doesn't break down, which it's quite.
There was far less traffic 20 years ago than there is now. Cops had less technology. Cell phones were not ubiquitous. So to do that in a V12 Ferrari would have been a walk in the park, as we've proven, because we've seen on the Musketball, 100 horsepower cars have gone in the low 32 hours. The most recent U.S. Express, old cars have gone sub 32 maybe even sub 31. Like, it's absolutely possible for a modern V12 Ferrari to do 32 hours without breaking a sweat.
Yeah, but not breaking down.
On that note,
is basically, I mean, it's a fantastic GT car as long as you've got a team of mechanics and the sort of that you yourself can. Really,
it was already prepped for the bull run. They made it through that without breaking down. You could do a cannonball. On to the next run. It was not until 2013 that a team of three, and this is arguably the most well-known record in modern times, Ed Bullion, Dave Black, and Dan Huang in a Mercedes CL55 were the first team in history to go sub 30 hours. And that was a ceiling that Brock Yates had said would never be eclipsed. But eclipse it they did, and by more than an hour, 28 hours and 50 minutes on Columbus Day weekend, which is kind of known as the golden weekend for attempting a cannonball. It was the ruiner of hopes and dreams for all of us who thought we were going to go out and break Alex Roy's record, because, 31 hours was maybe possibly feasible, unless you read Alex's book, in which point it would discourage you and tell you that it was absolutely physically impossible to beat 31 hours. But 28:50, that was a whole nother ball game.
That was an eye-opening thing for everybody. And it came from nowhere. Like, we didn't know anything about it. Like, nobody. But of course, now it's hindsight. Hindsight, usually we start getting told about these things. We kind of know things are about to happen, especially big things. But this was completely out of the dark by someone that nobody knew. And really, not only that, it was, there was no cannibal community. There was, nothing back then.
Right.
There was nothing at all. And it was completely from nowhere. But as soon as you read it, that was, you knew it had been done. I knew it. Before I ever met Ed, I knew it had been done. And when I met him, you can know he did it. Like, it's just, the man's a computer. I've raced Ed in junk cars. And to be honest, he's just faster than me everywhere. Like, it's kind of shocking to admit, but it's true, Like, I'm the side by side, he's in a limo, I'm in a 74 Dodge Monaco. And I was thinking, my God, I really hope one of us runs out of petrol soon. It was me. I run out of petrol. I didn't check it out, nothing.
He brought respectability, I think, to modern cannonball. Love Alex, but he is a strong personality, we'll say. Richard Rawlings is an even stronger personality. So you had those two firecrackers that were the cannonball figureheads, and then you have tall, slow and low talking, articulate Ed Bullion, who had all the proof you could possibly need, who took it back to the classic Red Ball to Portofino, and who just brought a sense of respectability Cannonball.
Like, I mean, when he came out in 2006 and he did that, it was mind melting, right? He's just like my favorite. Every time I meet him, he's like my favorite Playboy racing driver, right? He looks like he's just dropped in from the Gumball Rally. He's got a scarf, he's like, he's got his own jacket. He's got his little Pulitzer thing. Honestly, I love him. I couldn't get any better. He's like an authentic character from the great race.
He's like this. He's like the Scarlet Pimpernel. He's elusive. Yeah. He'll just show up randomly, make a splash, and then be gone for a while.
He's awesome. I love him. I love him for the juxtaposition between him and Ed is perfect.
It's amazing.
Ed is just like super humble, super straightforward, and a computer. Like, you ask him something and he'll work it out. You can see it going in his eyes. Eyes like tachometers,
Yeah.
Now,
going back to proof, right? So Ed set a new standard for proof. He had third-party GPS data that was triangulating his location, whatever, 100-page printout that Doug DeMuro from Jalopnik reviewed before he would publish the story. That was journalism as opposed to today where they just, somebody claims it. All right, we'll run the story. But Alex Roy would not believe that Ed had beaten his record until allegedly he used some friends in the FBI to pull up Ed's cell phone data And once he viewed that, he said, oh, okay, yep, he actually did it. But Alex did not want to accept for the longest time that his record had been beaten.
Alex had end-to-end video, and that was what he said. That was his golden rule of... We talked about this many times. He's like, that was his golden rule of proof. If you didn't have end-to-end video, you didn't do it. But the triangulation was by far the better way to do it. But
sure.
Either way, whichever way you look at it, like, they both set different standards of evidentiary proof, which we'll come into at some point in time, maybe later on in this conversation, maybe around the 25-hour mark.
Possibly, although we are only discussing actual records, and that's a secondary record. With that said, it is time for a commercial break. Celebrity Machines is a proud sponsor of Switchcast. Celebrity Machines offers more than 250 different screen-accurate license plates as they appeared in movies and TV shows like Back to the Future, Ghostbusters, The Fast and the Furious, Breaking Bad, and so many more. Celebrity Machines also makes our dealer insert plates as well as our commemorative 2539 plates from the fastest cannonball run ever. If you're looking for a gift for somebody you like or for garage art for your own place, check out celebritymachines.com for more info and use promo code SWITCHCAST for a 25.39% discount at checkout. Again, go to celebritymachines.com and use discount code SWITCHCAST. That brings us to 2019. The record that everybody was chasing, Ed Bullion's record, was finally beaten after another 6 years by, well, none other than myself and Arnie Toman and Berkeley Chadwick in a 2015 Mercedes E63 in 2019, November 10th to 11th, with a time of 27 hours and 25 minutes. And of course,
this is my favorite car of recent times.
Why is that?
Angry Ursula. Just love it. Honestly, I've been in it. I just, another one of the cannonball cars I've been in, but loved it. It was so subtle, yet intimidating. I loved what he did with it. I loved the color. It was so basic looking. And it's a monster. It just sounds great.
Love everything. That 5.5 liter twin turbo V8 was nothing to mess with. I still maintain, and Arnie gets all the credit for this, that is the best cannonball car ever. There will never be another one, and there hasn't been another one. The low coefficient of drag, the low coefficient of frontal drag on that car was amazing. We got over 12.5 miles to the gallon average. It would easily do 200 miles an hour without breaking a sweat. We did not achieve those speeds on the run, but that car was stable at high speeds. It was comfortable. It had massage seats. It made good sounds. It just did everything so, so well.
It's the iron fist in a velvet glove. I love it.
Yes. And of course, fully outfitted with all the typical countermeasures and disguised to look like a normal car. The black wheels were changed to silver. All the carbon fiber was wrapped in silver. The red calipers were changed to black. We put the base front grille on, took all the badges off, put vinyl over the taillights and headlights to change the shape of them. And following in the wake of Alex Roy and Ed Bullion, there was indisputable multi layers of proof, end-to-end video from multiple angles, third-party GPS tracking, third-party witnesses, scouts, spotters, et cetera, as much proof as anyone would need to put us in jail for history. So moving on from that one, we come into 2020, and there's one record we need to discuss before the pandemic that has not been claimed, but we do believe it exists. And we talked about records that people have not submitted proof for. In this case, it's because they don't care about getting the credit for the record. They just wanted to do it to do it. But allegedly, in February of 2020, an anonymous team claimed a record in an Audi RS7 of 26 hours and 38 minutes. Now, the only real notification we had about this was some trash talking on social media. So it wasn't initially in the best spirit of things, but some of us have become good friends with the people who ran it, and they have claimed that there is video evidence and there is lots of information to back this up. But again, they did it for kind of their own purposes, just to say we did it, never intended to claim it publicly. And as a sidebar, I think, honestly, that's kind of one of the best ways to do it, right? Obviously, in order to let the previous record holders know that the record's been broken, you have to make some sort of a claim. But they did it without any of the media attention, without any of the notoriety. They just went out and did it. And I think that's pretty cool. So prior to the pandemic, the record was allegedly reset. No proof, but maybe there is lots of proof. It's just nobody's seen it. That brings us into the pandemic, and the roads got emptied, and some cops were not enforcing speed limits, but not all departments. And in April 4 and 5, 2020, there was a number of runs that occurred on that weekend. That was kind of seen as the golden weekend. It was early in the pandemic when traffic truly was, you know, roads were pretty much empty and cops were not enforcing speed limits. That was not the case for the entirety of the pandemic, which we'll get into. But an anonymous team
that weekend was chosen.
Right. Chris Allen, James Allen, and Cal Odner in an Audi A8L, which was owned, leased by Chris Allen's dad, went supposedly on a whim and reset the record to 26 hours and 38 minutes. Now, they did not intend to claim the record publicly either, other than maybe letting Ed know that it had been done. But some of their scouts, who they had found randomly on the internet, started posting videos. I got sent the glimpse link from Ed, who got it sent from one of their spotters. So they had cracks in their security system. And very, very quickly, the media got a hold of it and it became a public record, even though they had not intended for that to happen. And of course, because of the nature of how it was portrayed, it was essentially like, oh, these kids just went out on a whim and did the Cannonball record, and this is the worst thing ever. And I think that kind of spurred the reaction by the Cannonball community of maybe there should be an asterisk on it because of how it was perceived that it was done. Now, the truth was not that. They actually were very experienced drivers. They had been wanting to do Cannonball for a while and just saw the pandemic as a fantastic opportunity, and they seized it, which anybody could have done. Arnie and I had talked about going again that weekend, which in hindsight, I wish we had done, because I think 23 hours was possible in the E63 with our team, but we didn't. We didn't for multiple reasons.
But I'll take the blame for the asterisks.
You'll take the blame for the asterisk. I think Ed gets a little blame for it too, but why do you take the blame for the asterisk?
Because at the time we were like, you know, bear in mind I was in New Zealand, and bear in mind that weekend, so I was meant to do a couple of runs myself. Then that weekend was chosen for a few people to go and have a little bit more sporty fun with a more unlimited flavor. And I was sort of meant to be there, but of course I was trapped in New Zealand. Yep. And when the whole thing happened, the roads were, I mean, the road in NZ was dead. I was tracking at the time, and there wasn't a single cop. Nobody was stopping anybody. And would I have gone? Hell yes. You know, hell yeah. I was the middle one between Ed and Alex. Alex was like, it's a terrible idea. Nobody should go. He was living in New York. Ed was like, hey, let's be fair. We'd all go if we had the chance. And I was like, well, the road conditions are different. And as soon as the COVID thing finishes, people are going to asterisk it. Like, it's going to end up with an asterisk because it's an unrepeatable time. And maybe it is an unrepeatable time. But does it deserve an asterisk? Probably not.
Well, and here's the difficulty with that. So you go back and Brock Yates said the only rule is there are no rules. You look at the past 120 years of Cannonball history, things have changed over time. More traffic, less traffic, better roads, radial tires, whatever you want to say. Countermeasures have changed. The highway system, sure. nobody's ever said, or, you know, some were done during a competitive event. Some were solo records, right? You can't say, as soon as you start putting qualifications on it, where does that end? Right. So Cannonball has always been.
I'm not saying that I think that it's the same thing now.
Right. Well, it's just the reason I think there can't be is there was no start and end date. It wasn't like, oh, there's a month shutdown and then it ended. It was a gradual scale back. So at what point do you say this is over? Right.
Because at what point do you say it began? Because it was actually very tricky. So I was out there when they started shutting down everything, and there was a noticeable drop off in traffic. So yeah. I was driving the cab, not my current cab. I actually bought a new LTD cab, a Crown Vic cab, and I was driving across. And it was obvious that there was less traffic on the road even then in March. So it's a very hard to draw a line through it. And plus, it doesn't really, at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter. Because
you still had to go and you still had to not get arrested or break down or anything like that. Allegedly.
There's a ton of extra chance of that, actually.
Yes, but as the pandemic continued, not only did traffic ramp back up slowly, but enforcement ramped back up. In some states, it actually was it went crazy because they said everybody's driving fast, so we're going to ramp up enforcement and make a bunch of money off tickets. So they were ticketing everybody. So yes, and maybe the first week or two there was no cops, but then. The latter part of it, there was more cops in some states. Yeah, there were some states that were still not enforcing, but the other states more than made up for it, you know, because they're super enforcing. And there was a number of overall record attempts during that time. Now, Ed had said something on his channel that people interpreted wrongly to say that the record was beaten seven times, and that was not the case. What he had said was, to illustrate how many people and how much easier it was during the pandemic, he said it had taken 6 years for his record to be beaten, which was when we went. But during the pandemic, his previous record was beaten seven times. So there were seven sub 28-hour, 50-minute times set during the pandemic. Now, I think that was also because there were so many teams that had been planning to go already that were going to go during that time frame, and it just happened that the pandemic happened as well. So, like you said, we were all planning a big run that first weekend of April, and it got canceled. So actually more people would have gone if the pandemic hadn't happened. Had the Boston Brawlers. You had Sean Petter doing his diesel run.
Yeah.
Yummy was planning to go with a solo run, who has a solo record currently. Everybody was planning to go anyway, and they were all very fast, very highly prepped teams. So we can't entirely blame the pandemic.
No, we can't even blame the pandemic at all. The thing is, people don't realize what was going on at the time. In fact, I think the general public, apart from us that really know, don't realize kind of how things went. I mean, when Ed did his run in 2013, there was no community, so to speak. There were people that thought about it. There were people that talked about things, but they had nowhere really to go. Mm-hmm. It wasn't, I mean, I rang Ed when I was talking about doing my race. I rang Brock, I rang everyone. But it was literally a case of me calling people, calling Alex and calling Ed and calling it. Before, like, there was no central hub of a community or a community. But since 2013, that's grown into quite a big thing. I mean, it's big now.
Yep.
It's a big community. And interest in Cannonball has gone through the roof. I mean, look at Vin Wiki. I mean, none of that existed. And all of the meeting of all of us, even though all of us, we all met really in the C2C, in the 2904. That's where we all sort of got together. And then we formed an actual big community. So I talked to Tommy Davis about it, and he said to me, all of a sudden it was like a glorious time. 2019 was like the time when everybody was together and the community was as tight as it had ever been. And it was really quite big. We were all quite serious. I don't know where we've gone past that now, but that was certainly the peak Cannonball time. 2019, 2020, 2021, everyone was aiming at runs. And I was getting calls every other week, but people aiming to do a run. It was crazy.
There was Troy Schneider in the Corvette who was actively going after Ed's record, and he got sub 30 on one of his runs. There was the Boston Brawlers who made three different attempts. They were going after Ed's record. We beat it. So then they said, well, we're going to go after Doug and Arnie's record. And they beat 27:25, but we had already beat 25:39. So they went three times sub 27 hours, but never held the record. So it's
incredible, man.
Always a bridesmaid, never a bride is their saying. They were 5 minutes short of the record a couple times and then 18 minutes short of the final record. So we have to give credit where credit is due to them because they are a very formidable team with some very fast times. Just their timing didn't work out based on when the record had reset to actually break the record. So we went in May 2nd and 3rd of 2020 and took back the record with a time of 25 hours and 39 minutes. And this time we went in an Audi S6 with a spotter, Dunedel Dariush. And the reason we didn't use the E63 again, which was the better car, is because when Arnie was scouting for another team on that golden weekend of April 4th and 5th, a tractor trailer fell asleep and ran into the back of the car. So in a 24-hour time period, the E63 was wrecked and our record got broken. So in order to still take advantage of the, you know, lower traffic during the pandemic, we scrambled and built the Audi S6. By the time we went in May, the East Coast was still like full pandemic, but the Midwest and West Coast were pretty much open back up. There was a lot of enforcement. Thankfully, we didn't see much of it, but the team that came behind us, who was going for the coast-to-coast-to-coast record, did have quite a bit of police interaction and traffic issues and stuff like that. So it's tough for me, I think, when people immediately dismiss our record because of the asterisk. Oh, it doesn't count. You did it during COVID. And I go, you weren't there. Yes, it was better, but we didn't do it early COVID. We did it late COVID. There's a difference. There's a big difference. And we had the record beforehand anyway. You know, all these different things. I'm like, you still had to go.
I think we all really came to the conclusion there is no asterisk.
Yeah. Yeah, there can't be.
I mean, everyone I talk to now, we've all come to the conclusion there is no asterisk, right? I mean, I don't think you'll find one person in the community now that would stab an asterisk on any of it.
The Boston Brawlers then ran in on Columbus Day weekend of 2020. Now, stuff had opened back up more, but it was still reduced traffic. So their time was 25 hours and 58 minutes, I believe, 57 or 58. And no, it was 57. They, one of the videos done about that claimed that it was like the non-pandemic record. So like kind of implying that there is still an asterisk on the other records. Now, I don't think that was generally accepted by the public because we don't see it. Nobody accepted it as the overall record. So I think that was the confirmation that there is no asterisk on the 2020 records.
There's no asterisk. Those times are so fast that they've kind of wiped a lot of it off the clock. But also, the time period has changed. If you imagine that was the golden period, I'm going to put it like this, if that was a golden period between 2019 and 2020, maybe 2021 at the latest, that was the most, well, everyone was going for it. Everyone I was talking to, people were building cars. And by then, we'd had a community where we all knew exactly how to do it. Whereas before, we didn't. We had to guesstimate what we were doing, and people tried in everything. But by that point in time, it was all jammed into the best ideas of what we were going to do and how you had to do it. And it was open. We all talked about it. I mean, at that point in time, the community was completely open. We chatted on the same pages. We talked to each other all the time. And everybody knew exactly what you had to do and how capable you had to be to do that run.
Yeah. Yeah. And we've talked about how many teams we're going for, but I would argue, and you touched on this, 2019 was also a golden era. Without the reduction in traffic, there was very little construction. It was I think there was less traffic and better drivers than there is now. I don't know what happened after COVID. It's like everybody forgot how to drive and everybody started driving instead of flying or something. It's awful now. But I feel like 2019 was already kind of a golden era. There was no construction anywhere. All these major projects across the country had wrapped up and they were about to start new ones, which they're doing now. The construction is terrible now. And I don't think you could go beat 27-25 now just because it's much, much more difficult scenario than it was in 2019. So, I mean, even sub 30 now, I think is going to be a really, really difficult feat just because of the current conditions. And I'm sure that will cycle again. But I think pandemic aside, 2019 to early 2020 was a golden era.
I think we're in the end cycle of it then. Because I think that this cycle, it sort of transforms every few years. Now, we had a long run from the early 1900s, really, all the way through to the 60s and 70s. And by the 70s, it became big until 83. Then there was a massive gap of anybody doing it. I mean, cars had changed. Like, there were more smog, more emissions, less powerful, 85-mile speed limits, more draconian law enforcement. There was just a huge stop. The cars gradually got better and drivers got interested. And people like, you know, Dustin and everybody from the Mischief crew and the Gumball and everything sort of brought it sort of steaming back up until Alex did it, which brought all of us back into the idea it was going to happen again.
Absolutely.
And then it only became a matter of time. And then we've gone through nearly the exact same cycle that we did in the 70s. Two races away from the end of it, you know, and then a massive gap. And I have to say that, I mean, myself, I'm aging out now. I'm coming up to 50. I don't really want to do it. The law enforcement is getting greater. The traffic on the roads is terrible. And the trucks are just insane. I don't know why there's so much trucking going on. I kind of do when I think about it, because it's Amazon. It's just people.
I don't think I would want to go now.
No, and the road service is terrible. Like, it's not just the roads, it's the roading. It's bad. Like, it's not like it used to be, and it's certainly not fun. But the part of this that I really know, and I have to say it, is because I'm getting older.
We all are. Maybe there's a new generation out there, but if there is, we hope that they continue in the legacy to do it safely. Above all, 120 years of no... outsiders being affected by cannonball events and no outside injuries, no fatalities, nothing. In fact, I think the only fatality in a known cross-country run related to this was the president of the Lincoln Highway Association back in the 1920s was driving across the country with his wife on their honeymoon, and they wrecked and rolled their car and were sadly killed. And that's, you know, had nothing to do with cross country racing. It was just a leisurely drive. But in all the races in 120 years and all the record attempts, we know of no accidents involving other vehicles and absolutely no fatalities, which is a wonderful, wonderful track record. And I think proves the point of what we're all trying to prove is that, kind of building upon what Brock wanted to prove, is that good, well-trained drivers in proper cars can safely exceed the speed limit, that the roads are built for higher speeds. Now, I think that point has changed now, because I feel like the drivers out there are so poorly trained that until we can't even make that point now, until we have a complete ground up reformation of the driver training system in America. I'm scared to go out and go fast myself now because other drivers are so terrible that I'm not prepared to react to whatever they might be doing. So I think as much as we've pushed the point of good drivers can go fast, I'm not sure that's the point anymore. I think it's, we need a complete revamping of the driver training system and driver philosophy in America before we can even talk about exceeding the speed limit. So that's my soapbox. Switch Cars is the enthusiast dealership where we buy, sell, consign, service, and store only cars that we like ourselves. Well, we'll store anything that pays the bill, except EVs. We're not going to store EVs, and we definitely don't sell them either. Anyway, check out our hand-picked inventory at switchcars.com and mention discount code SWITCHCAST for your special pricing. That's right, check out our hand-picked inventory at switchcars.com. I want to let everybody know that if you want to see a number of the cars that have set the record and see a visual timeline of what Ben and I have just completed in part three, including the Cannonball Record E63, actually all of the cars we have talked about in the modern era or their representatives will be at this event. So you can see the BMW M5, the Mercedes CL55, the Mercedes E63, the Ferrari 550 Maranello, and the Audi S6. And this will be at Minerva, Ohio, September 14th, an event called Cars Are the Stars. You can get your tickets at carsarestars.com. That's all spelled out. carsarestars.com. We'll also have the link in the show notes. So with that, that is a
complete... And you'll get to meet us all. We'll all be
you'll
there.
Get to meet all of us, including Ben. Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Can come
all the people
me
as well.
Hello.
Yes, and have a beer with Ben. So thank you all for joining us for this three-part series. That is the complete and accurate history of the Cannonball and Transcontinental Record since 1903 to the present day as we know it. These facts are subject to change as we get new information, but this video will live on in infamy forever. So thank you all for joining us. We appreciate you. And Ben, very, very glad to speak with you as well.
Always good afternoon from me, and take care when you drive home, guys.